Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
And it's a Friday morning, June 26, 2015, in the 12th week of Ordinary Time. Good to be with you. Hope you're having a blessed day so far. Hope you can stay tuned for our entire program. It is sure going to be interesting. Of course, our friend and brother in the Lord, Matt Swaim, the host of the Sunrise Morning Show, will be joining me in just a minute. Also, Lewis Brown will be back with us. Of course, he's from the Christus Medicus Foundation. He was on with me yesterday, along with Mike O'Day, discussing the fallout, what could happen with Obamacare, and he's going to be back on today. And he'll be talking about the decision, which, of course, was a disappointment. It came out yesterday, but wasn't surprising to many of us, and he'll give us his take on that. And then Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse will be joining us. You know her well from the Ruth Institute and her many books and the great work she does on marriage. She's also worked very closely with the National Organization for Marriage, and she has a really great website where she is now really, and has been for quite some time, actually, really taking a look at the fallout from the sexual revolution and asking for folks to tell their story. The sexual revolution has been going on for my entire lifetime, she says on her website, ruthinstitute.org. Millions of people have been harmed by its empty promises. At the Ruth Institute, and especially at the Ruth Refuge, we are healing the world one broken heart at a time, and we invite you to be part of our mission. She says, whether you're a child of divorce, a donor-conceived person, or a refugee from the hookup culture, the Ruth Institute is here for you. You will find friendly virtual faces, listening ears, and powerful information. So she has been so involved in doing amazing research on the fallout from our over-sexualized culture, and more specifically, of course, the damages of contraception, which my personal opinion is that it all goes back to contraception. Once we went that road, as it said in Humana Vitae, everything started to implode. So this is very important in light of what is expected to happen at the Supreme Court today, which is not going to be, I think, good news. You may have heard some of the experts we've had on the last couple of weeks, Natalie on my show, Al Cresta, across the board, and many of the other programs at EWTN, and in our coverage at the Register and elsewhere. There is a feeling that given what's happening in our culture, the Supreme Court is going to go the same way. What does that mean? What will that look like? Dr. Jennifer will give us some insight, and then we'll wrap up, and I think this is truly important, to make sure that through all of this, we never lose our peace. Dan Burke from the Avila Institute, who's an expert on spiritual direction and prayer, also with the Register and EWTN, joining us at 39 minutes past the hour. Right now, though, Matt Swaim from Cincinnati. How are you, buddy?
Morning, T. How are you?
It's an interesting day, let me say that. Interesting time to be a Catholic.
It is that. Well, we have all kinds of decisions that are coming down that will affect us. There is one positive decision that's happened at the Supreme Court this week involving religious liberty and free speech.
Yes.
In Gilbert, Arizona. Mm-hmm. So all is not lost, Teresa, and, you know, we need to remember where we put our faith, not in a federal government, but in Christ and His Church.
Absolutely. It's never lost because we have Christ and we win. We know. We've read the book.
Yeah. However, even though we lose a lot of stuff.
Yes, there's a lot of battles, so we have to be well prepared. And that's why we have Dr. Jennifer on with us this morning, also Lewis Brown. We have to really strengthen ourselves, and that's one of the reasons I really want Dan Burke to talk about that this morning. How do we go into our, I don't want to say happy place, I want you know, our safe place in terms of giving us the tools spiritually to engage the culture in a loving way?
Well, you know, the church has been assaulted for centuries, millennia, since the very beginning. And the church in Europe knows how we feel about this because they've been experiencing it before we have. So I think that we bond together as brothers and sisters in Christ. No matter what the news, the church will stand. The gates of hell are not going to prevail. And we just got to figure out what we do next.
That's right. And so I'm sure, depending on what happens at the Supreme Court, they're saying it could happen today, could happen even Monday. You'll probably be covering this in detail next week.
Just a little bit.
Right.
Yeah, we have several experts on next week. I'm glad you're talking to J. Rowe. She's one of my favorites. I always feel better after talking to her, because every time I think that the whole world has its head screwed on backwards and I talk to Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse for about 5 seconds, I realize the world has not gone completely insane because people like her live in it.
Right.
But we're going to talk with Ken Craycraft from the Shade Law Group, Dr. Greg Bottaro, who's doing a marriage webinar coming up later in the early in the month of July as well. So we'll have a lot of coverage on the marriage question, on the HHS question, on all kinds of things. But, you know, with our luck, Anna Mitchell and I were saying, you know, the decision would come out at 9:05 today after we went off the air. But
no, normally it comes out at 10, because the decision regarding the Obamacare, the ACA, came out at like 10:15, 10:30. So it's right after I get off the air.
As soon as you and I are off the air, right?
Yeah, it's like, the breaking news part of me as a former news reporter just goes nuts with that stuff. It's like, why
absolutely.
Is it happening now? We could have 9 o'clock. But anyway, that's going to be great. We've got the Alexandria, Julie, and Greg joining us.
Sure.
And we're also going to be talking with a number of other experts. And I think you and I, being old married folks, you a lot younger than I am, but the most important thing, I think, though, for those of us who are married, if we really care about marriage, the most important thing we can do is make sure our marriages are strong and be good witnesses.
Well, would we be in this state as a culture if marriage between one man and one woman were at peak performance strength? You know, there's so many people who don't know what marriage looks like, so why not just redefine it to mean anything?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, it's interesting, if you go on the wires this morning, and our wire service that we use, I don't know if you're, I know you use AP, we use MetroSource, they had some of the sound bites from the hearings in April, and oh boy, was that interesting to go back and listen. Now, I read the transcripts and listened to some of the discussion, but that's when I couldn't talk, and so I was monitoring everything online. And very interesting in terms of some of the questions that Alito asked, and Kennedy asked some really good questions. So, I don't know. He could be, when you're listening to him, you could say he could go either way, but I'm not optimistic at this point. So.
Nor am I. And I'm thinking it's a 7-2, but.
I was thinking the same thing. That's what I was thinking. Yep.
But I've guessed wrong about things before. So.
Yeah. Well, Matt, we'll let you go. We know you've got a lot of work to do to prepare for next week, depending on what happens in about an hour. And we're going to go to Lewis, because Lewis Brown is with us from Christ Medicus to give us an update on the Obamacare situation. Thanks, Matt. Matt is the host, of course, of the Sunrise Morning Show, produced by Sacred Heart Radio in Cincinnati. And I'll talk to you on a Monday. Matt Swain. Lewis, okay, so we're skipping the news this morning and giving you the rest of this segment to explain to us, with your expertise, Lewis Brown. I'm proud to say he's from the Archdiocese of Detroit, and he is with the Christ Medicus organization. He was on with us yesterday with Mike O'Day. Can you give us just a summary of what happened and then what we should be concerned about now as Catholics?
Sure. Yeah. Happy to do so. So yesterday, the Supreme Court issued a decision in the case of King v. Burwell, and King was the plaintiff, and the plaintiffs were a number of residents from Virginia. Burwell was essentially the government. She's the Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services. And there was a dispute over what the Affordable Care Act actually said. The Affordable Care Act it's done a lot of things, you know, but two of the things that the Affordable Care Act did was empowered the states to set up essentially insurance marketplaces for the folks in that state to be able to purchase health insurance on a kind of marketplace that the state would set up. What the law provided, the Affordable Care Act provided, that in a situation in which a state declines to set up a marketplace, that the federal government can come in and set up a marketplace for the individuals in that state to purchase health insurance. What the act also provided was that, pretty specifically, it said that folks who are in the state exchanges, are in exchanges set up by the states, these online marketplaces that are run by and set up by the states, that they can receive essentially discounts, coupons, tax subsidies from the federal government in order to be able to allow them to afford to pay for that health insurance. So you have these, you know, it was pretty clear under the act that the federal government can give subsidies to individuals that are purchasing health insurance on their state's health care exchange if it was run and created by the state. What was a little bit less clear to some was whether those tax subsidies could also go to folks that are purchasing insurance on these online marketplaces that are set up by the federal government. So in a case of, you know, the states that said, we don't like the Affordable Care Act, we're not going to set up our own state health care exchange, the federal government was authorized under the law to come in and do that. And in those states that where the federal government were setting up those exchanges, the question became, well, those people that have purchased insurance on these federal-run online marketplaces, do they get subsidies? And it's a big deal. It was a big deal, Teresa, because somewhere between 7-8 million people potentially would have lost subsidies under the Affordable Care Act to buy insurance in those federal exchanges. And it would have really, you know, I think on the downside, on a human level, we as Catholics would have had a concern about the folks that have access to health insurance and therefore some level of health care from because they have these discounts, these coupons, these subsidies. And so that would have, you know, on a pretty basic level as Catholics, we know that that's not a good thing. That's causing some pain. On the other hand, the Affordable Care Act has done a lot of bad things. First, it has allowed the public funding, the direct or indirect, depending on how you see it, subsidization of abortion.
That was my next question.
Insurance coverage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right. You know, that's the first thing. We also know the HHS mandate, which required employers to directly, you know, pay for, provide contraceptive coverage, abortifacient coverage and sterilization coverage for their employees. So if the Supreme Court had ruled for the plaintiff and said, you know, these 8 million people don't get the subsidies, that would have really undermined the act, and it would have required Congress to have a response and would have given an opportunity to really improve upon the act and on things that we really care about, on conscience protections, on pro-life issues, on other things. It would have been a lot of opportunity there. But now I think we know the court ruled in favor of the government and said essentially that, you know, the federal government is free to provide subsidies to folks that are in these federal marketplaces. And I think the overall, you know, at the end of the day, what does that court decision say? It really says that, really what it was is the last very serious legal challenge to the Affordable Care Act, in my mind. And I think it's possible that the Affordable Care Act gets repealed. I think it's highly unlikely. Most likely, the Affordable Care Act is here to stay. And what we as Catholics need to do is really think about, what do I need to do to live my faith in my health care decisions, in my political decisions, intentionally? And I think that's the way forward, because, you know, that's where we're at right now with that decision.
Yeah, we're running out of time. We have to take a break, but I'd like to have you back on with Mike maybe next week and sort through some of this.
Sure.
Because and I want to refer also, give us your website, Lewis.
Sure. There's two websites. First, we have a healthcare ministry that enables Catholics, empowers Catholics to do healthcare sharing. So you can go to www.cmfcuro.com, www.cmfcuro.com. We do a lot of legislative advocacy. You can go to the Christ Medicus Foundation website, which is www.christmedicus.org, C-H-R-I-S-T-M-E-D-I-C-U-S.org.
Okay, and these links will also be on our archive page on AveMariaRadio.net, because Andrew archives all of our resources. I also want to send people, Lewis, there's some good stories this morning on LifeNews.com regarding the Supreme Court upholding the subsidies. And there are over 1,000 Obamacare plans that actually fund abortions. And now I'm sure you know that pro-life groups are calling for a bill to ban abortion funding after the Supreme Court upheld the Obamacare and the subsidies yesterday. So we will talk about that. And also now in Congress, they're already talking about things that they have to do, and that this could be something that's going to come up at the election next year because costs are going to increase, many say. So not over yet. We'll keep talking about it. Thank you so much for joining us at the last minute on this decision and for your information yesterday, and we'll get back with you and Mike as soon as we can.
That sounds great, Teresa. Happy to be on. And I would encourage your listeners to look at H.R. 940, the Healthcare Conscience Rights Act, and H.R. 36, the Pain Capable Unborn Child Protection Act that would protect children in the womb after 20 weeks. So
right,
those
we'll
are
talk
two
more
bills
about that.
For them
yeah.
to look at.
Great. Lewis, thanks so much. Lewis Brown from Christ Medicus. Again, website he mentioned, cmfcuro.com. Dr. Jennifer Robeck Morris is up next, plus your questions at 877-573-7825. You're listening to Catholic Connection, a co-production of the Ave Maria Radio Network and EWTN. Stay tuned. 877-573-7825. It is a blessing to speak with Dr. Jennifer Robeck-Morse at women's conferences, and she's fantastic, a wealth of information. And her website is great. I was mentioning at the top of the hour all the work she's doing to help people be able to fall out of the sexual revolution. If you have a story, she wants you to go to her website at ruthinstitute.org and share the story. There's healing and hope available, of course, in the truth of our faith and the beauty of the church teaching. And Dr. Jennifer, always good to talk to you. Thanks for all the great work that you do. I just wanted to get your sense of where we're at right now. All of us are pretty much expecting, the experts I've talked to, both in your area of expertise and also the legal area of expertise, are saying that they think that this is not going to be a good decision coming down from the Supreme Court. What are you thinking, praying about? What's your feeling right now pending this decision?
Well, I've known since 2013 that eventually we would come to this day. The way the court overturned Doman, not just that it overturned the Defense of Marriage Act, but the way it overturned the Defense of Marriage Act made it pretty clear that we were in a rolling Roe v. Wade type of situation. You know, in other words, that eventually the court is going to make it so that we're going to have genderless marriage in the entire country. And so I'm whether the court hands down a decision today or on Monday, you know, we're all on pins and needles about that, but it's simply a matter of how bad it's going to be and what grounds they're going to do it on, and whether they're going to explicitly say that man-woman marriage is sex discrimination and therefore it's unallowable, whether they're going to say, whether they're going to make sexual orientation into a protected class, how they're going to interpret the 14th Amendment, you know, the exact legal grounds for it, we don't know what they're going to do. And that will shape the legal landscape, of course. But the overall picture is going to be that man-woman marriage is a relic.
Well, you're an expert in the area of how the sexual revolution has just torn families, people, individuals, our culture apart. What do you think the impact could be if, as you say, they say that the court decides that, you know, this is the law of the land?
Well, there's going to be another whole round of victims of the sexual revolution. And we've never, as a society, fully acknowledged that the first steps of the sexual revolution created victims and harmed people. Children of divorce are the most obvious people who have been harmed by the sexual revolution. But in a certain way, their parents were victims too, because people who got divorced and had children who were harmed by that decision, most of those people didn't set out to hurt their children. They made those decisions because they were lied to, because the culture told us, you know, oh, the kids are resilient, the kids will be fine. And then you find out your kid isn't fine. And so inside the family, there is a lot of tension often that the child can't just come out and say, gee, that was really terrible for me. It's really still hard for me that my mother and father don't love each other, or that my mother and father are still quarreling, or that you're more interested in your new love interest than you are in me. You're more interested in your grandchildren with your new spouse than you are with my children. You know, those kinds of hurts simply arise from the structure, the damaged structure of the family. Those harms don't go away, but we've never really talked about them or confronted them. And so if we start telling people, oh, it'll be okay, you know, if you have a child with a same-sex partner, no matter how you acquire the child, it'll be fine. The child won't have any problem with it. All you have to do is love the child enough and it'll be okay. Well, that's really not true. And we have every reason to know right now that that's not true, and that there are going to be problems. And it's going to fall to people of faith to be ready to help people with these problems and to try to counter some of the lies that people are going to build their lives around and thereby continue to be harmed.
So what are some of the stories, without getting too personal, what are some of the stories you're hearing when you ask people to share if they're victims of the sexual revolution?
Well, you know, the biggest group of people that we hear from at this point, Teresa, are the children of divorce. We still have operating from our old website something called kidsdivorcestories.org. And when people write into that, it's gut-wrenching. It's just gut-wrenching. People write in about the last time they saw their father, when, you know, when they were 6 years old and their father said goodbye to them, or, you know, they talk about not having pictures of their, of the whole family together. You know, they have maybe two pictures of themselves with their mother and their father, in the same picture. They talk about the kind of lifelong impact of feeling rejected by one parent. And the reason this is germane to the whole issue of genderless marriage is that when you decide you're going to have a child and you're in a same-sex relationship, what you're really saying from the very beginning is this. You're saying, my sexual relationship, my relationship with my sex partner is more important to me than my relationship with the child's other parent. In fact, I don't want any relationship at all with my child's other parent. And somehow we think that's going to be okay with the child, right? And the fact is that people want and need and deserve a relationship with both of their parents. And we're putting up more and more structural barriers to children having a relationship with both of their parents, down to and including the fact that governments are lying on birth certificates, basically.
It was interesting in the Holy Father in his audience message on Wednesday. I don't know if you read it, but he was talking about the fallout of when parents are fighting and when they're having troubles in their marriage and how the kids are the victims, and it was quite powerful. And at one point he said sometimes, once things get really ugly, sometimes a separation is necessary. He didn't say divorce. He wasn't promoting separation, but he was talking about taking the weaker spouse out of harm's way when there's violence or exploitation. And what did the secular media do with that? They took that and just spun it. My producer Andrew and I were looking at the headlines and said, see, the Pope is saying that divorce and separation are okay. I even had some listeners write me and say, why is the Pope saying this? He didn't say that. He said just the opposite.
Exactly, exactly. See, look, here's what you have to understand. The sexual revolutionaries believe, the sexual revolutionaries have already lived out their philosophy, and their philosophy is a dead end. And the philosophy is hurting people. It's hurting people around them. It hurts you. You may not realize it when you're in the midst of it, but it hurts people. And so, in order to try to build a whole society around this, you have to get rid of dissent. You have to suppress people who say they've been harmed, and you get to the point where you can't even try to help people who've been harmed. So you witness the attack on crisis pregnancy centers. Okay. That's a kind of propaganda effort by the sexual revolutionaries to make it appear that nobody's ever been harmed, that there's no problem, that really all you need is an abortion and it'll all be good. Mm-hmm. And what you're just saying about the Holy Father is the sexual revolutionaries are trying to play capture the flag with Pope Francis. Pope Francis is the flag, and everybody's jockeying for position. See, can we get him to represent our position? And that's what they're trying to do there. Whereas, as you say, I think the man's completely orthodox. He may not have the best judgment, but he's completely orthodox, particularly on sexual matters. He's totally orthodox.
Yeah, even mentioned that in the encyclical. Yeah, we're going to take a break. We're going to hit the satellite in just a second, so I want to make sure I put up the phone number because I know there'll be people who want to talk with you. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris, and by the way, she is going to be in Michigan. Very excited. I'll see her there at a fantastic conference that the Archdiocese of Detroit is putting on in conjunction with the Courage Ministry. It is ministering to people with same-sex attraction. It's an international conference. You're all welcome to attend. You can go to couragerc.org to check that out. I'll be speaking on media, engaging the media. It'll be Dr. Ralph Martin, Dr. Jennifer Morris, Dr. Mary Healy, Archbishop Vigneron, Father John Mercado. It's going to be a great conference, and we hope we'll see you there. And then you can hear more of the great work of Dr. Jennifer. She will be right back with us, and we'll take your calls at 877-573-7825 and check out her work at the Ruth Institute, ruthinstitute.org. We'll be right back. Be not afraid. It is I. Have faith. Remember what he did in the Sunday Gospel? He calmed the waters. 877-573-7825, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris from the Ruth Institute. Check out her Facebook page and also the website, ruthinstitute.org, and you can go right there, find the link to the Facebook page and just like the page, and also find out great information about what she's doing to address all these issues and the fallout from the sexual revolution. Okay, we have a shameless plug for a couple of really, really good products that I want to put out there, great resources. That's okay, because I'm a fellow author. It's important to do this. Tell us about your latest book.
I have a book called The Sexual Revolution and Its Victims, which is a collection of essays I've written over the last 20 years. And on the cover of the book is a picture of Marilyn Monroe. And we think Marilyn Monroe is a great symbol of the sexual revolution and its victims, and its victims, right? Because glamour, beauty, sex appeal, fun, that's what people are still putting icons of Marilyn Monroe on their clothing and their tote bags and all that kind of thing. But if you look past the surface, this woman had a terrible life.
Right.
She died at an early age of a drug overdose. We don't know whether it was murder, suicide, or an accident. According to her biographer, she had 12 abortions over the course of her lifetime. She did not have a happy life, but all of that is airbrushed away in the name of promoting the image of glamour and excitement. And that's the perfect metaphor for the sexual revolution.
Wow. And the CD, Defending Marriage with Dr. J.
Yeah, the CD is some of my testimonies in front of state legislatures. People find those testimonies to be very compelling. And so what we did is after I had done a few of them, I went into the studio and recorded them. So you can hear what I said to the legislators in Rhode Island, for example, or Minnesota. And then I also have on that CD a story, a kind of apocalyptic, futuristic story that I wrote in 2010, talking about what would the city of Oakland be like 30 years from now if we redefine marriage and continue down the sexual revolutionary path. And so it's a story really telling how it affects real people, ordinary people, gay, straight, male, female, young and old. How are people going to be affected and living as a result of genderless marriage? And I wrote that in 2010, and a lot of the things I predicted have already happened, Teresa. We didn't have to wait 30 years.
You know, it's interesting. I'm sure you're familiar with the book After the Ball. That's really hard to get a hold of now. I mean, it's out there in print, but you can find some used copies on Amazon, I think, for about $200. But that laid out the whole strategy in terms of the desensitization. And now we see this, now that pretty much society has said, being straight or homosexual is fine. It's whatever you want. Now we see this push being done with the whole idea of transgender or gender neutral, or you can be a man, you can be a woman, you could be both. Where do you see that going?
Yeah, see where that comes from, Teresa, is that one of the prime ideas of the sexual revolution is that the gender of the body, the sex of the body, is not particularly significant. And if you see any differences between men and women, that's all socially constructed and can be reconstructed culturally. See, that was the early phase. Now we're to the phase where we're telling people that you don't just need social and cultural software to redo it. You can use technological hardware to change who you are. And so that's all a matter of choice. So it's all about the fluidity of sex roles and the human body. And so what's really behind that is a resentment of the body, resentment that we're created male and female, and a way of really trying to conquer nature with technology, you know. So it doesn't surprise me at all that now we're dealing with transgenderism is becoming such a big push now, because now that genderless marriage is happening, you know, and they've achieved that objective, the next phase is to move into the further deconstruction of gender, including the body itself. And so that's where that's going to go. It's going to get really topsy-turvy, kind of a surreal feeling that we're all having. I think a lot of us have that already. That's why it's very important that people stay connected with groups like the Ruth Institute, so that you can hear the truth, so that you can be fed by the truth. When you have people in your family who are going through these things or who are going down these paths, you are going to need to be sustained by the knowledge that the church has been correct on every single one of these issues.
Yes, yes.
Never acknowledged, never thanked, but correct, has been proven correct on every single one of these issues. So you need to stay close to Jesus, and you need to stay close to groups like ours, the Ruth Institute, that are helping people to see the reality of what's going on. Because your kids who are going to make these crazy decisions, your friends, your neighbors who are going to act on these lies, they're going to need some help from you. And it's not just that you need to go blast people and say, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong. In the social arena, you don't need to act like that. In fact, it's best that you don't act like that. you've got to hang in there with people, walk alongside them, and be prepared to tell them the truth when the time is appropriate that they can actually hear it. I mean, that's our problem right now. People can't even hear the truth,
right.
And that's because they're all wrapped up in defending their guilty consciences from the things that they've already done.
Yeah, it's a total case of projection. For example, the whole thing with not only the abortion industry, but with this whole push and the fallout from the sexual revolution, for any of us who dare to even just try to discuss in a loving way with anyone who is either in support of it or involved in a relationship, obviously, that is sinful, they automatically turn on us and say that we're hateful. When they're the ones who hate us, we're offering love and we're offering the best answer, God's plan, which is going to make everybody happy, whether they want to agree with it or not.
And so they
turn it on us. Yeah.
But here's the thing, to understand that reaction, how powerful that reaction is, Teresa, I mean, think about the post-abortive woman, because this, this is an example that we're all more familiar with at this point. Because I went through this. You have an abortion, and you're starting to figure out something's wrong, you know, that it wasn't all it was cracked up to be, and you feel terrible. You feel terrible because of what you did. And then you can't get any help. Nobody will talk to you about it. But whenever somebody says abortion is wrong, all you hear is, I'm wrong. My guilty conscience is now in my face, overwhelming. And then they can't hear. They can't think. You know, you become shut down. And so that's the genius of the pro-life movement, has been to realize that very point, that the woman who has had an abortion is extremely vulnerable because she knows she's wrong, right? And so we don't need to tell her that in a certain way. I mean, we do need to tell her, but what we need to do is help her discover it within herself and be there for her as she discovers it, so that she can discover it.
And who's picking up the pieces, just like with these other areas of the sexual revolution? It's the believers, the Catholic and the Protestant communities that are running the pregnancy resource centers, that are there for the women, that are offering help, that are there for the families, that are offering, you know, rides to doctor's appointments, clothes and food and support and parenting classes for 2 and 3 years. Planned Parenthood's not doing that. Your local abortion mill isn't doing that. It's the church, the body of Christ.
That's right.
This is the same thing because, as you said, the victims are all over the place and there's going to be more. Jennifer, we're out of time. Always a blessing to have you on the program. Okay, so real quickly, let's give you time to mention the book and the CD again.
Okay, go to RuthInstitute.org, Sexual Revolution and Its Victims, and Defending Marriage with Dr. J in the Ruth Store.
All right, well, keep your cell phone close because you know we're going to want to talk to you again, regardless of what the Supreme Court decision is. Dr. Jennifer Roback, Morth of the Ruth Institute. Again, check out the website, great resources, and her book and CD, ruthinstitute.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back, Catholic Connection, co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN. Good to be with you and trying to give you as many resources as possible. And most importantly, do not lose your peace. In this world, you will have trouble, but take heart, for I have overcome the world, says our Lord. Remember the gospel, as I mentioned, the gospel last Sunday, so beautiful. Storms are raging, waves are coming over, apostles are thinking they're going to drown, and Jesus is asleep on a cushion in the back of the boat. And so the apostles say, Lord, hello. And he wakes up, calms the storms and seas, and says, ye have little faith. So is it easy? No. But we know that we win in the end. And in the meantime, we have a lot of work to do. But most importantly, we have to keep our eyes on the prize. Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever, as it says in the book of Hebrews. And Dan Burke is so good at helping us focus, giving us tools. Of course, he's with the Avila Institute, EWTN, and the National Catholic Register. So first thing I want to talk to you about, Dan, good morning, thanks for joining us, and we're giving you an extra segment because there's so much to cover, and I really want to lead people into this weekend because a decision on marriage from the Supreme Court will either come out today or possibly Monday, so this way we can take it to Mass, we can pray about it, we can, you know, really think and get strong. But we also need to take a look at, and this is something that you're discussing at the Register and also at EWTN, the Catholic News Agency. Let's do this quickly, the decision that we're waiting for regarding Medjugorje. There have been some stories surfacing that, and we don't know if this is confirmed yet, and Jimmy Akin has a piece that Tom Price just sent me the link to, and also you have a piece on the Register website, that apparently the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith has reached a decision saying that the apparitions are not to be considered real, but that this could still be, Medjugorje could still be considered a place of prayer. That's what we're hearing right now, but that is not, there's no confirmation on that yet. Is that correct?
Yeah, and we've got Edward Penton, who's, of course, a Register Rome correspondent, who has an inquiry into the Vatican Communication Office to determine if they're willing to confirm or deny this. And you know, there's, folks need to understand that the Italian media is no different than the American secular media, and there's a lot of misinformation floating around regularly. And so really no one should be up in arms over this until we get some confirmation from the Vatican. And then it's not likely that Father Lombardi is going to reveal, you know, the conclusions of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith and their recommendations to the Pope. If anything, I'm expecting a confirmation of whether the meeting happened or not, which would then be the meeting to prepare the report or review the report or finalize and approve the report. But we just don't know, and it's causing a lot of consternation with folks. It's a little unusual that, you know, you'd have a meeting to come to a conclusion, and then within 24 hours somebody is reporting that the document is already ready. It doesn't ring true to me, but it might be true.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm looking at a story at Catholic News Agency with the headline that reads, CDF reportedly judges Medjugorje apparitions false but permits pilgrimage. So that's out there. It's out there on CNA. It's out there on some Rome, as you said, Italian news agencies, and also inside the Vatican, Robert Moynihan's reporting it. So there's a number of different sources that are saying this, but again, also saying this is not confirmed yet.
Yeah, it's all based on one or two Italian outlets, and we just don't know. And the key is, you know, with Medjugorje, and this is what I wrote about. Of course, Jimmy Akin wrote a great piece called 12 Things to Know and Share about
right.
what's going on. And Jimmy is dispassionately factual, and he's very trustworthy, and he never says anything he can't back up. So if folks want the real scoop, that's the place to go until we hear from Edward or another source on confirming. But the real issue that I'm concerned about is the hearts and minds of those who've had an authentic encounter with God at Medjugorje. And the reason I say authentic is because wherever God's people are disposed to his work and their soul, he will meet them. I don't care if you're on the moon or in Medjugorje or in the bottom of the sea. It doesn't matter where you are. God is always calling us to him and drawing us to him. And whenever we respond, regardless of the circumstance, Scripture says, St. James says, draw near to God and he will draw near to you. That's a promise. And so you've had a lot of good people who have had life-changing encounters at Medjugorje. The issue is the central issue is this. Did it come because of or in spite of Medjugorje? We don't know the answer to that. The Holy Spirit is presently at work in leading the church to come to a conclusion of whether it was in spite of or because of what's going on at Medjugorje. Regardless, we need to recognize that it's the work, if there is good fruit, and I mean if there is good fruit, if the outcome of the encounter makes you holier and makes you love your spouse more and helps you to go more deeply in prayer or causes a conversion or confirms a call to the priesthood, whatever the outcome is, if it's good and holy, then you can be assured that that's an authentic encounter with God, or at the very least that God is in some way, even if remotely, blessing what's happening there. But the issue is it's with God, not we don't need to be attached to Medjugorje or any place or any vision. I don't even care if it's already been approved by the church.
Mm-hmm. It all goes back to God. That's the whole thing.
It does.
These are ways that God exposes himself when they are approved, and that he speaks through various people over time and through time and space and gives us these incredible witnesses such as Saint Bernadette, the Children of Fatima, Our Lady of Guadalupe, of course, and San Juan Diego and other apparitions around the world. And so I always tell people, let's see what the church has to say, and let's, if we really want to build on those examples of these saints and the children with these messages, go to the approved apparitions and see what the church has to say about them.
Yeah, I mean, if you really want it, that's really my approach. I don't generally have a curiosity about apparitions. I was involved in the New Age movement before I became Christian, and you know, there's always this sensational thing and that sensational thing, and it's an inappropriate curiosity that the church teaches us is unhealthy for us. And so as a Catholic, I haven't brought with me that curiosity, mainly because I came to the conclusion that the Holy Spirit is not napping, and that the magisterium of the Church is the vehicle through which the Blessed Trinity conveys truth to us. And why waste time, in my opinion, waste time with things that have not been vetted? But all that said, every approved apparition was at one time unapproved.
Right.
So, you know, you just have to approach these things with detachment and not, and avoiding getting your soul entrenched in something that's very destructive.
Follow the Church. I mean, really, just go to the solid Catholic sources and follow the Church. I think that's the best advice. I also want to give the link to the National Catholic Register, which is ncregister.com. Let's take a break. When we come back, I want to spend the last 7 minutes really helping people, because this decision from the Supreme Court, it really is huge, and it is just, I think, let's be honest, we're hearing from all different areas. Dr. Jennifer Robeck Morris was just on with us. She's an expert on the sexual revolution and the culture. I've talked to legal experts. You at the paper have been working on this story. The people that we deal with, these wonderful experts in various areas, whether it's the law, whether it's the culture, are all saying this is not going to be good. So that means, what do we do? We can never lose our peace. How do we remain focused, and how do we continue to preach the truth in love? We'll talk about that with Dan Burke, of course, from the National Catholic Register, EWTN, and the Avila Institute on a Friday. Stay tuned. Welcome back. It's Catholic Connection on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network of Friday morning. We're waiting for the decision from the Supreme Court, which could happen in minutes, about 10 minutes from now, most likely. And Dan, this is a trying time for us, because we're pretty much convinced, based on the research that we've done and the preparation, that it's not going to be good in the way our culture is going. Your advice from a spiritual perspective on how we prepare ourselves and how we hang on to Christ and witness in the best way possible.
Well, you opened up this segment before in the best possible way, speaking of Christ's in the boat during the storm, and how the apostles were the disciples were getting all upset, and he wakes up, and I didn't even know that he was really sleeping, but he wakes up, as the story says, and he by his power calms the storm, and then says, "Hey, what's up with you guys? Where's your faith?" And I think that's really the right place to begin. Father Jacques Philippe is one of the modern masters in the spiritual life, says that there is never a good reason to lose your peace. It's always bad when you lose your peace, because you lose that mooring to our God, who transcends time and space and who is not hindered by the evil in our culture. Our God is not hindered by the movements and the political movements. Our God is not hindered by elections. But the primary miracle that he's always seeking to work is conversion of hearts, of each individual. And our culture, unfortunately, it's becoming more difficult to do that work. But here's the bright side to me. The bright side to me is, if our churches are becoming less populated because people who really don't believe, or who wanted to make it a different kind of social institution, are becoming, it's just not as cool or a great place to work anymore, or going away, then you have this stronger remnant who really does believe and who really does want to bring Christ to people, and they really do know Christ. And so as it gets darker, they get brighter. As the darkness descends, the work of God in the hearts of those who truly know him really become much more powerful. We, of course, see that in China, in the underground churches and other things, or wherever the church is oppressed. You know, the seat of the martyrs is you know, as the church has said, is often the birthing ground for the new work of God. And so, as long as we, as the church, as long as those of us who know Christ really work hard to make sure that our focus is on good catechesis, introducing people to Christ, drawing them ever deeper in prayer. If we can do those things, we will outlast this thing and rebuild our culture. If we don't do those things, then, you know, we're in a lot of trouble. That we'll end up like Germany and other European countries that where their churches are empty. But I just don't sense that's going to happen in the United States.
My concern is to really get to a point we can rouse the troops successfully, because I still think within the body of Christ, I'm talking mainly about the Catholic Church now, there are so many people who don't think this issue is all that big of a deal. Either they're in support of so-called same-sex marriage, they think that this is, you know, hateful if we are against it, or they're just not really all that worried about it, just trying to get through the day. These are issues that don't affect them. And so how do we connect with people and say, you must be concerned about this?
Well, you got to do what you do all, you know, every day, and what EWTN does every day and teach. But the issue is not the people who have the views that you just described are not converted. You know, they're not living a real and authentic life of faith. They're living as sort of they're playing around with religion. They have this shallow faith. It's really just a social club for them, in essence.
Oh, that's a good
point.
That
confirms what, you know, makes them feel good. We've got to get people to come to know Christ and to deepen their relationship with Christ, and then the result of that will be that when you talk on the radio, you know, the only people who respond to you and me are those whose hearts are converted or on that path, or, you know, who are open and disposed to God. If they're not, our arguments will fall to the wayside.
Mm-hmm. So we have to preach Christ.
We do. I think we do. I mean, it sounds, I don't know if it sounds overly simplistic or it sounds...
No, but you know what? This is an interesting point, because Al Kreschen and I were just talking about this. We had breakfast about a week and a half ago, and he was saying we have to get back to what they did. And Archbishop Vigneron said this on my show in the local hour from the Archdiocese of Detroit. We have to get back to what they were doing in the early church, because it's that bad out there in our culture right now.
Yeah, and if you think about it, I mean, it's a great thing to go back and read Paul's writings about suffering. You know, during that time, they're crucifying people. It's a little bit worse than what we've got going on here now.
Maybe not, and if you look at what's going on overseas, though, but go ahead, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, you're right. Outside of the U.S., it is like the early church. And what does he say? Rejoice. What does he say? He says, in Romans 8, I consider not the sufferings of this present time worthy to be compared to our future in heaven. So it's this heavenly perspective, this animating principle of Christ within us, the light that comes from us affects others. And even when we then begin to argue in the public square, which is so problematic for the gospel, the political realm is so problematic in that it obscures the gospel because it has no charity inherently. It's just a position that we take. But if we have more Christians who are vital or vibrant in their faith, they'll affect people who then listen to the policy and may be more open to what makes most sense for our country.
Absolutely. We're out of time, but we will talk again, I'm sure, next week. And again, Dan Burke from National Catholic Register, EWTN, and the Avila Institute. Have a blessed weekend. Never lose your peace. Remember, God loves you, and so do we. We'll talk to you on a Monday. Stay tuned.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio, and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Krucek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening, and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.